You're listening to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast. It's for the week ending January 29th, and it's podcast number 72. Earlier podcasts and links are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. I'm Joe Ilya. We were able to establish contact with Australia. Working across a 13-hour time difference is a challenge, but the wait was worth it, I hope you'll agree. We're going to discuss two new oral treatments for multiple sclerosis with Dr. William Carroll, who wrote the editorial accompanying three recent studies in the New England Journal of Medicine. First, this review of recent important clinical news stories. In terms of patient inquiries, I'll bet you've heard of a series in the New York Times on the hazards of radiation in medicine. I know this audience doesn't have many radiologists, but many of your patients get put under these devices, and I'm recommending the ongoing series of articles as being well worth your time. A link is on the website. And speaking of hazards, there's more evidence available on the dangers of lowering glycated hemoglobin levels too much in diabetes. An article released online in The Lancet found that among people who underwent intensified therapy for type 2 diabetes, the patients in the lowest as well as the highest deciles of glycated hemoglobin levels after intensification were at higher mortality and cardiovascular risk than others in the large cohort studied. The sweet spot for glycated hemoglobin, according to this research, is about 7.5%. Also this week, the FDA has approved a new drug for type 2 diabetes, liraglutide. It's a glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonist that will be made available as a once-daily injection. It carries an increased risk for pancreatitis, however, and so it's not being recommended as a first-line treatment. Finally this week, a study in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute says that 2007 guidelines for evaluating symptoms of early ovarian cancer, abdominal pain, bloating, or urinary urgency, have a very low positive predictive value. In about 800 women diagnosed with epithelial ovarian cancer and 1,300 controls, the positive predictive value for early-stage disease was less than 0.5%. The authors say their study, and quoting, argues for a cautious approach to the use of symptom patterns to trigger extensive medical evaluation for ovarian cancer. And now here's our interview with Dr. Carroll. You're listening to Clinical Conversations. The New England Journal of Medicine last week reported on the results of two trials of oral therapy to prevent relapses and multiple sclerosis. The drugs, fingolimod and cladribine, both work by targeting circulating lymphocytes, but in different ways. The effect of both is to lower the number of lymphocytes available to cause havoc in the central nervous system. An editorial comment in the journal described the three reports collectively as offering a new horizon for treating MS. We've got that editorialist as our guest this week. Dr. William Carroll is head of the Department of Neurology at the Sir Charles Gairdner Hospital in Perth, Western Australia. Thanks for talking with us today, Dr. Carroll.
Delighted, Joe.
I wanted to ask how you see that these drugs form a new horizon for patients and clinicians.
They form a new horizon in two ways. Firstly, obviously, they're oral therapies, and this is the first time we've had available or are going to have available oral therapies for MS, which have been shown unequivocally to be of benefit in reducing relapse rates and disability.
Mm-hmm.
The second is that they are directed at the lymphocytes, which is, again, a shift in the direction of the treatment that we've been following up until this time.
The way that they work is really interesting, and I think that you explain it nicely in your editorial, but let's see whether I understood it. Cladribine seems to take some lymphocytes out of the picture completely, while fingolimod keeps them locked up in their lymph nodes. Is that right?
Essentially, that is correct, yes.
And is there a danger of creating, a lymphocytopenia in patients because of this effect?
Well, theoretically there is, and the side effect profile of these drugs shows that there is a higher rate of at least herpes virus infections. There may or may not be some effect on underlying malignancies. We're not really sure about that. But let me qualify that by saying that the earlier drug, natalizumab, which is now in use around the world, some 60,000 people worldwide use this medication, it just targets lymphocytes from entering the nervous system, doesn't destroy them, doesn't do anything else, but we got this side effect of progressive multifocal leukoencephalopathy.
Yeah.
Due to reactivation of a latent virus within the brain. So there is a danger. We don't know whether these drugs will have a similar effect or not. We don't think so. Nothing's eventuated yet, but time will tell whether there is going to be any other unexpected side effects with this form of approach. With the drug alemtuzumab, which was reported in the journal early last year, it's a monoclonal antibody against CD52, and it destroys T cells and B cells, both lymphocytes, and results in a very long-lasting lymphocytopenia. That doesn't seem to be associated with those sorts of problems. So we're not sure what will happen with these two new drugs.
So patients with multiple sclerosis are going to have more normal lives as a result of these drugs then?
Certainly in terms of not having to inject themselves either daily or second daily or three times a week or weekly or monthly, which is the current approach with the drugs which we have available, the so-called disease-modifying therapies and natalizumab. So that will make lives easier for those who take this form of medication. And certainly it will extend the range of therapeutic options also. So once clinicians get to know these drugs, they get familiar with their side effects, how patients tolerate them and what have you, then I think this will be a benefit also to have these different treatment options available.
For a primary care physician, who's caring for one of these patients who comes in, who's on one of these new drugs, what should they be on the lookout for, or what might they see that they should bring, say, to the attention of that patient's neurologist?
Well, when and if these drugs are approved by the FDA and they come into to use, there will undoubtedly be a suite of monitoring approaches that people will be asked to do, and primary care physicians will be heavily involved in that. But certainly, to begin with, they will need to be monitoring liver function tests, their full blood count, particularly their lymphocyte count, and looking for any cutaneous lesions. With fingolimod, there will be routine ophthalmological assessments because of the risk of an effect on the retina, particularly the macula. And also, when they're first commenced, there is a transient bradycardia. Sometimes patients go into first or second degree heart block. So monitoring patients, monitoring their pulse, reporting dizziness or postural dizziness, things like that, will all be important in the initial monitoring.
So anyone seeing something like this in one of these patients should bring it to the attention of the...
Yes, I think that's right. They may need to. There may well be protocols developed that primary care physicians will follow when and if these things eventuate. So I don't think it's going to be too onerous. I think it looks to me as though most of the side effects that we know about at the present time are manageable, and that there will be systems in place to monitor and manage them.
All right. Well, it sounds like good news then for people who could use some. And I want to thank you, Dr. Carroll, for taking the time to talk with us today.
Oh, I've enjoyed it, Joe. And I think people with MS, their primary care physicians and their neurologists are all going to enjoy this this new era in treatment.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Thank you for your time.
You can reach Clinical Conversations at 1-617-440-4374. Or write to me, J-E-L-I-A, at JWATCH, that's J-W-A-T-C-H, .org. All earlier podcasts are all available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where links for the news stories can also be found. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time, and thank you for listening.